When you think about it, the cause-effect begins to resemble some mad logic loop by the data artist Carolus, or perhaps a print by Escher. The Shrike had come into existence because of the incantatory powers of my poem, but the poem could not have existed without the threat presence of the Shrike as muse. Perhaps I was a bit mad in those days. In a dozen years, sudden death culled the city of dilettantes until only the Shrike and I remained. The annual passage of the Shrike pilgrimage was a minor irritation, a distant caravan crossing the desert to the Time Tombs. Sometimes a few figures returned, fleeing across Vermilion Sands to the refuge of Kronos Keep, 20 kilometers to the southwest. More often, no one emerged. I watched from the shadows of the city. My hair and beard had grown until they covered some of the rags I wore. I came out mostly at night, moving through the ruins like a furtive shadow, sometimes gazing at my lighted palace tower like David Hume, peering in his own windows and solemnly deciding that he wasn't home. I never moved the food synthesizer from the dining dome to my apartments, preferring instead to eat in the echoing silence under that cracked duomo like some addled Eloy fattening himself up for the inevitable Morlock. I never saw the Shrike. Many nights, just before dawn, I would awaken from a nap at a sudden sound, the scratch of metal on stone, the rasp of sand under something's foot. But although I was often sure that I was being watched, I never saw the Watcher. Occasionally I made the short trip to the Time Tombs, especially at night, avoiding the soft, disconcerting tugs of the anti-entropic time tides, while I moved through complicated shadows under the wings of the Sphinx or stared at stars through the emerald wall of the Jade Tomb. It was upon my return from one of these nocturnal pilgrimages that I found an intruder in my study. "Impressive, Martin," said King Billy, tapping one of several heaps of manuscript which lay about the room. Seated in the oversized chair at the long table, the failed monarch looked old, more melted than ever. It was obvious that he had been reading for several hours. "Do you really think that mankind deserves such an end?" he asked softly. It had been a dozen years since I had heard the stutter. I moved away from the door but did not answer. Billy had been a friend and patron for more than 20 standard years, but at that moment I could have killed him. The thought of someone reading Hyperion without permission filled me with rage. "You date your Kantos?" said King Billy, riffling through the most recent stack of completed pages. "How did you get here?" I snapped. It was not an idle question. Skimmers, dropships, and helicopters had not had much luck flying to the Time Tombs region in recent years. The machines arrived sans passengers. It had done wonders in fueling the Shrike myth. The little man in the rumpled cape shrugged. His uniform was meant to be brilliant and regal, but merely made him look like an overweight harlequin. "I followed the last batch of pilgrims," he said, "and then came down from Keep Kronos to visit. I notice that you've written nothing in many months, Martin. Can you explain that?" I glowered in silence while sidling closer. "Perhaps I can explain it," said King Billy. He looked at the last completed page of Hyperion Kantos as if it had the answer to a long puzzled riddle. "The last stanzas were written the same week, last year, that J.T. Tilio disappeared." "So?" I had moved to the far edge of the table now. Feigning a casual attitude, I pulled a short stack of manuscript pages closer and moved them out of Billy's reach. "So that was, according to the SDF monitors, the date of the death of the last remaining Poet City dweller," he said. "The last Except for you, that is, Martin. I shrugged and began moving around the table. I needed to get to Billy without getting the manuscript in the way. "You know, you haven't finished it, Martin," he said in his deep, sad voice. "There is still some chance that humanity survives the fall." "No," I said and sidled closer. "But you can't write it, can you, Martin? You can't compose this poetry unless your muse is shedding blood, can you?" "Bullshit," I said. "Perhaps, but a fascinating coincidence. Have you ever wondered why you have been spared, Martin?" I shrugged again and slid another stack of papers out of his reach. I was taller, stronger, and meaner than Billy, but I had to be sure that none of the manuscript would be damaged if he struggled as I lifted him out of his seat and threw him out. "It's time we did something about this problem," said my patron. "No," I said, "it's time you left." I shoved the last stacks of poetry aside and raised my arms, surprised to see a brass candlestick in one hand. "Stop right there, please," King Billy said softly, and lifted a neural stunner from his lap. I paused only a second, then I laughed. "You miserable little hangdog fraud," I said. "You couldn't use a fucking weapon if your life depended on it." I stepped forward to beat him up and throw him out.